So I'd like to start off by reading you a letter that Dawei sent to the layperson Li Xianqin. And I couldn't find this letter in Tom Kirchner's translation. So this is from Cleary's Swampland Flowers. It goes like this. Buddha said, if you want to know the realm of Buddhahood, you must make your mind as clear as empty space and leave false thinking and all grasping far behind, causing your mind to be unobstructed wherever it may turn. The realm of Buddhahood is not some external world where there is a formal Buddha. It's the realm of the wisdom of a self-awakened sage. Once you are determined that you want to know this realm, you do not need adornment, cultivation, or realization to attain it. You must clear away the stains of afflictions from alien sensations that have been on your mind since beginningless time, so that your mind is as broad and open as empty space, detached from all the clinging of the discriminating intellect. And your false, unreal, vain thoughts, too, are like empty space. Then this wondrous, effortless mind will be unimpeded wherever it goes. So what is the realm of Buddhahood? It is not some external world where a Buddha resides. And it is not an internal world where your very own Buddha sits. It is not inside, outside, or in between. So where is it? In this moment, it is looking from your eyes, and at the dinner table it chews with your teeth, and it walks in the exact direction that your toes are pointing. But you aren't it, although it is you. If you want to know this realm of Buddhahood, which isn't inside, outside, or in between, you must make your mind as clear as empty space and leave false thinking and all grasping far behind. This will allow your mind to be unobstructed wherever it may turn. And how do you make your mind, or allow your mind, or invite your mind to be as clear as empty space? On the one hand, because empty and clear is the mind's original nature, you do not have to make it, allow it, or invite it. That is its nature, and it is exhibiting itself as so in this moment, and in this, and now, in this. You just need trust that this is so. Dawei wrote, mind is Buddha. There is no other. It's like a relaxing fist that becomes a hand, or water becoming a wave. A wave is water. A hand is a fist. The mind is not subject to past, future, or present. Since it is not subject to internal or external past, present, or future, this mind and Buddha are just false names. Those words are all approximations at best, reference. When you drop them, when you let go of each thing, when you surrender into the chirping of J sounds, when you let go into the breeze blowing across fir branches, when you surrender into the dripping of last night's dew, what is there? Who is there? when you forget yourself by melting into mu, into sounds, or into breath, when you are utterly absorbed in chopping vegetables, in ringing the bells, or chewing, the mind is vast and fathomless. It is clear and unobstructed as the great blue sky. When we are absorbed in our practice, whether on the cushion or not, false thinking and all grasping are left far behind. So this is an interesting point Dao Hui is making. He is not saying that thinking is left behind. He says false thinking is left behind. False thinking is whatever blocks intimacy and creates apparent separations. Correct thinking is to remember, is to recollect, is to be mindful that all beings, sentient and insentient, are from the very beginning, not other than. Correct thinking is the vow to free or to carry over or to liberate all beings, though those beings do not need liberating. These thoughts, when fully engaged in, are the empty sky. They are the clarity of the mind, which has no walls and is unobstructed no matter where it turns. In this letter, Dao Hui's first sentence, Buddha said, if you want to know the realm of Buddhahood, you must make your mind as clear as empty space and leave false thinking and all grasping far behind, causing your mind to be unobstructed wherever it may turn, is a beautiful and direct prescription for Sesshin. Allow your mind to be as clear as empty space. This is all you need do, and you do this by fully committing to your one and only practice. Stay with it, and don't deviate, and you will touch the realm of the wisdom of a self-awakened sage. Your eyebrows will mingle with hers. You'll see with the same eyes and hear with the same ears. Won't that be wonderful? How marvelous. So I'd like to read you a few lines from another letter that Dao Hui wrote, this time to his student Zhao Dao Fu. In it he wrote, the Buddha said, all beings possessing minds can attain Buddhahood. This mind is not the mind of worldly passions and fantasies, but the mind that emanates bodhicitta. Having this mind, there is no one who cannot attain Buddhahood. That educated people tend to create difficulties for themselves when practicing the way is because they lack faith. In your letter, he said, you say that owing to your dull capacities, you have been unable to attain a thoroughgoing realization. So for now, you will plant Buddha seeds in the field of your mind. These words seem ordinary, yet the meaning is profound. Just persevere with a willing spirit, and I will have no doubt for you. So these few sentences speak to everyone in this room. If you are educated, stop creating difficulties for yourself by following your thinking, by following your enchanting insights, and by following your penetrating vision. put down your incorrect cognitions, which always have you at the center. Instead, plant Buddha seeds in the field of your mind. And you do this by sharpening the knives when they are dull. You do this by bowing when the clappers crack. And you do this by turning off the lights when you leave an empty room. You also do this by returning to mu when you are daydreaming, or by listening more intently to geese squawking rather than to the sounds of your own internal chatter. A colleague of mine said she finds the students who seem to have most difficulty with Zazen are usually psychologists and psychotherapists. She noticed that they had to tear into each thought, feeling, and sensation as though unpacking it would forever free them from it. This is a form of narcissism. And if you stay anchored to this type of introspection, which is not Zazen, your practice will dry up and blow away like dust in a late afternoon breeze. We are not here to make or find meaning. Zazen actually carries us deeply into the body, this physical, emotional body, but it also, in the very same instant, carries us into the body of the world. When Shakyamuni Buddha woke up, so too did the Venus Star. And when the Venus Star woke up, so did you and I. So please open the hand of thought and simply let it go. And you do this by coming back to mu, to who hears, and to breath. Have faith. Have faith that the mind is vast and wide, and your incorrect thoughts create walls and obstacles where there really aren't any. Trust, which is an etymological sibling of faith, trust your practice, trust your situation, trust Sesshin. So if you find yourself in a dull place, in a dull state of mind, as did Daohui's student, for now, plant Buddha seeds in the field of your mind. And as I just said, you do this by returning to mu over and over. You do this by letting the sounds fill you. And you do this by coming fully to each number. Every time you return, you are planting a seed in the fertile soil of Zazen. Each time you come back to the task at hand, whether it is stirring the soup pot, striking the han, or preparing the tea, you are planting a seed in the rich soil of practice. Maintain that one and only practice, and in no time at all, the low, gray, cold clouds of winter will pass, and the unique breezes of spring will naturally arise. So when Dao Hui started to practice as a young man, he sat with different teachers in the Sao Tung, the Soto tradition. At some point, he felt he'd mastered what they were teaching. Somewhat taken with himself, and he was said to be very bright, he arrived at the Lin Chi teacher Tung Tong's monastery. One book I read said, when Tao Wei arrived at Chan Tong's monastery, his intellectualism was unrestrained. One day, Chan Tong asked Dao Hui, "Why are your nostrils so big today?" So in our idiom, that would be, "Why is your head so swollen today?" Dao Hui replied, "Because I'm at your place." A rather flip and glib reply, I think. Chan Tong said, "You really are a phony." Later, when Dao Hui was reading a scripture, Chan Tong asked, "What are you reading?" Dao Hui replied, "The Diamond Sutra." Chan Tong said, and this is one of our miscellaneous koans, he said, "This Dharma is everywhere equal without high or low. So why is Yin Chu Mountain high and Pao Fang Mountain low?" In the Dokusan room, I say, "So why is Mount Baker high and the Chuckanut Mountains low?" Dao Hui said, "This Dharma is everywhere equal without high or low." And Chan Tong said, "You certainly could be a lecturer's assistant, but nothing more than that." Aren't you folks lucky? Over the years, Chan Tong continued to nag and scold Dao Hui about his reliance on thinking and his enchanting insights. So if that is your tendency, you are in good company. But you too will have to drop your ideas if you don't want to remain a phony Chan person. Later, Chan Tong took ill, and before he died, he called the young Dao Hui to his room and recommended that he study and practice with Yun Wu, a teacher neither of them had met. He encouraged Dao Hui to continue applying himself and said, "Whether you come to realization or not, please be diligent both on and off the cushion." Pertinent words for us also. After Chan Tong died, Dao Hui made his way to Yun Wu. And I'll tell you about their time together in the next few talks. This Yun Wu was of peasant stock, and until he became a monk at the age of 30, he was a laborer. But as a monk, he studied with teachers in the different Zen houses, and he finally settled down with the Lin Chi master, Wu Su Fa Yen. Yun Wu was a gifted student, but it was two severe illnesses which pushed him through the gateless gate, not his giftedness. So we know Yun Wu for several reasons. He gave transmission to a female disciple, which was rather unusual at the time. And he worked in the Dokusan room equally with lay men, lay women, and male and female monastics. Again, something rather unusual for the time. But the most obvious reason we know him is that he lectured on 100 public cases or koan, where he added a heading or pointer to each case, and then made a sardonic, crisp comment on each koan point. And then he gave a wildly poetic, imaginal, and illusion-oriented commentary for each koan. And these words, when collected, became the Blue Cliff Record, the second book that we pick up in the Dokusan room. And incidentally, Dao Hui was rather appalled with the printing of the Blue Cliff Record, for after all, this is a tradition not based on words and phrases. So he and his students rounded up as many copies of the record as they could find and destroyed them and the wood blocks used to print them. So this was a rather bold and sincere action, and it tells us much about Dahui's confidence and integrity. And fortunately for us, his attempt at eradicating the book was unsuccessful. So now I'd like to read you the second paragraph from today's excerpted letter. It said, "Once you are determined that you want to know this realm, you do not need adornment, cultivation, or realization to attain it. You must clear away the stains of afflictions from alien sensations that have been on your mind since beginningless time, so that your mind is as broad and open as empty space. Detach from all the clinging of the discriminating intellect, and your false, unreal, vain thoughts too are like empty space. Then this wondrous, effortless mind will be unimpeded wherever it goes." So once you are determined, you do not need anything else other than the discipline to return again and again to your one and only practice. The young Zhao Zhou asked, "Should I direct myself toward it or not?" And Nan Chuan replied, "If you try to direct yourself, you betray your own practice. To direct yourself, to add anything, is to make your practice into an object, and it is to make yourself also into an object. By returning to Mu, you immediately let go of what was previously on your mind. When you return to who hears, everything else naturally falls away. When you come back to breath and to counting, your mind in that moment is unobstructed. In a very real way, you then are returning to the original mind, the mind which you never left. To think otherwise is a mistaken notion. When you are absorbed in practice on and off the cushion, your mind shows itself in its original state, broad and open, deep and fathomless. At that moment, anything can come forward and confirm you, as the Venus star did with Shakyamuni Buddha. And that mind, after confirmation, still has opinions, delineations, and discernments. It still thinks, feels, and has sensations. Mount Baker is still high and the Chuckanuts low. There are still sickness and wellness, old and young, male and female. But each of those things are seen through to what they actually are: insubstantial, ephemeral, and empty, empty of any separate identity. And this seeing through is the birthplace of compassion. This seeing through is the knowing that all are related and closer than your own breath. So please, just relax into your zazen. Just rest in your sitting practice, even though you may feel tired or uncomfortable. Just let go and be at ease, for you are on the path, and the path itself knows the way.